Capital correspondent. I'm Pete Tucker, filling in for Carmen Russell Sluchansky, who's on vacation. Today's May Day or International Workers' Day, and tens of thousands are demonstrating a protest throughout the U.S. Occupy Wall Street has put out a call today for a general strike. No work, no shopping, Occupy everywhere. In this, the first May Day since the Occupy movement touched off, we look at the history of the day and speak with Bill Berry, a professor of labor history, who will be calling in from a protest in Baltimore. We'll also get an update from Alexandria, Virginia, where outside City Hall, protesters are calling on legislators to prevent a mass displacement. Then on this day that recognizes the contributions and sacrifices of labor, we look at a company known to be less than union-friendly. Walmart, the world's largest retailer, is attempting to enter the urban markets here in the U.S. We'll talk with organizers in D.C. and New York about how the two cities have differed in their approach to dealing with the company. We'll also take a look at the money Walmart and the Walton Foundation have thrown around in D.C. and New York, which may be particularly timely in light of the New York Times' recent report that Walmart paid Mexican officials more than $24 million in bribes and then attempted to cover it up, possibly violating the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act. Finally, we turn to school reform and school closings. Both D.C. and New York are facing yet another wave of school closures despite community opposition. But first, for a history of May Day, we turn to Professor Bill Berry, a director of labor studies at the Community College of Baltimore, Kennedy. He joins us on the phone from Baltimore, rescheduled to speak at a May Day protest that's now underway. Welcome, Professor Berry.
Hey, how are you? Happy Good. May Day.
Happy May Day. Well, can you lay out the history of this day?
Well, the history of the day was really out of a movement for a shorter work day, which is an issue that seems to have disappeared. But back in the 1870s and 80s, unions began to demonstrate for the 8-hour day. And the 8-hour day was 8 hours of work, 8 hours of rest, and 8 hours for what we will. And it became a design in Chicago to take May Day as the first day to demonstrate for the 8-hour day. Unfortunately, several days later, there was a incident in front of a strike plant, and then there was a bomb thrown the next day, and it became what's known as the Haymarket Affair. But ever since then, May Day has been the holiday for the militant workers. And you can see countries, how they do by how they respond to May Day. Because almost immediately in the United States, President Grover Cleveland and the more conservative unions decided that the first Monday in September would be a day, and that's Labor Day. And so May Day is being revived, and I'm here. There's several hundred people here, postal workers, civil rights people, different groups, homeless groups, here at the Inner Harbor in Baltimore, where the Occupy movement was located for 3 or 4 months.
Didn't Ronald Reagan try and make it Law Day?
Richard Nixon did.
Okay.
It is Law Day. I don't know anybody, you see, I didn't see anything in the paper today proclaiming it, but no, Richard Nixon decided that would be the fitting response to May Day.
Talk a little bit about what you're seeing right now. Who are some of the folks who are out protesting? You said there's a couple hundred.
Well, there's a wide range of groups, and one of the things that I'm concerned with is that many of us live in gated communities. That is, the union movement is here. There are different unions. There's the hotel workers and the postal workers and the building trades, but they don't help each other out. There's not a movement, and they don't help the civil rights movement out, and they don't help the foreclosure movement out, and so we have a very fragmented groups of people. It's also a concern that everybody comes together for a great demonstration, and then what? You know, and now what was always the question after the Occupy movement. What comes next? How do we build a movement that's not going to just protest and that's not going to just kind of give moral imperatives like, oh, the system must operate better, but it's really going to work to change, to dislodge the system in the workplace, politically, and in our communities. It's a big order, but it's a lovely demonstration. Lots of young people here. I feel like I'm 200 years old, but I'm going to do it.
Now, you have been, I don't know about 200 years, but you've been at it for a while. And do you see a difference in the energy level in this May Day protest as opposed to the others, this being the first May Day protest since the Occupy movement touched off?
We have had Labor Day parades in Dundalk to try and capture some of that, and sometimes we'll get 25 or 30 people out. But there are many more here, a much more diverse group, and a much more encouraging group. And any time people commit to come down and participate in something like this, I'm encouraged. Because speaking for the union movement, the statistics just came out that we are now below 7% of the population, which puts us where we were in 1900. And so the union movement has been pushed back 112 years. And that's not a good sign, and slipping. And we see now many states feel no hesitancy about it, openly attacking unionism, making it a dirty word. And so we're in for the fight of our lives here.
What are some of the things you'll be saying when you address protesters?
Well, what I'm going to say is one of the things we talked about, or I don't know how much I'm rethinking because there's such a crowd, not a great sound system, but here at the harbor was the site of the first national strike in the United States, the railroad workers. And within two blocks of here, 10 people were killed, including an 11-year-old boy in 1877 by the militia. And so people think that they invented the movement. What those strikers knew was how to challenge their employer at work, how to get out into the communities, because they had thousands of people demonstrating. And they also tried to create a working men's party, which would be independent of the Democratic Party, which already controlled the city of Baltimore. And so that's what we need to do. Those are lessons we have to learn from history. We don't just read history, but we have to learn from it.
Professor Bill Berry, as someone who's involved in education, I think you'll be interested to note that we're going to be talking about education in our final segment. And before that, we're going to be talking about Walmart and the impact it's had. So any comments you have on both Walmart and the so-called school reform that ends in ever more school closures, it seems?
Well, I think it's terrible. I would say Walmart is a symbolic of the 21st century. You know, in the 20th century, unionism set the conditions for employment. And we as unions were 40% of the population. Other employers who were non-union paid the rate. Now we're not, and so Walmart sets the tone. And you know, people said, "Oh, you can't do anything about Walmart." Well, they said that about General Motors. They said it about U.S. Steel, and the workers went out and organized them. And we got to do the same thing with Walmart, because they'll bribe, they'll cheat, they'll steal, they'll do whatever they have to do to maintain their power, and they are global. And that's one thing the union movement needs to do is think globally, because it is very clear we are now workers in the global economy. As a school system, I mean, it's a classic case where we don't control the resources anymore. And we want schools here in Baltimore. They're closing rec centers. They're closing firehouses. And, you know, people still are reluctant to challenge the Democratic Party, for example. And so until that happens, until people say we're really ready for a change, then it's going to be tough times.
Professor Bill Berry, any final thoughts you want to leave us with on this May Day?
No, I just wanted people to be optimistic. And I've said that often when people who are religious get in tough situations, they go read the Bible. I go read labor history, because it shows us workers here, for example, in Maryland, at the railroad strike were defeated, were shot, were killed, displaced. But they came back, and we can do the same. And so I start every meeting by giving a kind of a pep talk, you know, to people. Don't be discouraged. We can accomplish things if we stick together and we get organized.
Thanks so much for your time. That's Professor Bill Berry, Director of Labor Studies at the Community College of Baltimore County.
Solidarity forever, Pete.
Thanks so much, Professor Berry, speaking to us from May Day protest in Baltimore, where he's about to speak. We now turn to another May Day protest, this one in Alexandria, Virginia, not far from where we're broadcasting in Washington, D.C. In Alexandria's West End, developer JBG is teaming up with the city in an effort to demolish more than 2,000 units of affordable housing. This is being done in order to make room for the construction of 12.4 million square feet of development, consisting mostly of luxury condos and luxury apartments. If approved in its current form, the project will displace approximately 10,000 residents, many of them Latino and African American. The issue is scheduled to come before a committee of the Alexandria City Council as early as Thursday, and a vote by the full council may come as soon as May 12th. Joining us on the line is Ty Smith, an organizer with Tenants and Workers United, a grassroots group based in Alexandria, which has put together this May Day Working People's Rally now underway in front of City Hall. Welcome, Ty Smith.
Good evening. How are you?
Good. Thanks for joining us.
Good. Thank you for having me this evening.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Talk a bit about this potential mass displacement that may be going on in Alexandria, where so much of the city's affordable housing is at risk.
Well, the travesty in all of this is that the city recognizes that there is already a shortage of affordable housing, and yet still they are targeting a part of the city in which currently over 10,000, nearly 10,000 residents live and who are literally struggling to afford market rate affordable housing. They have not made any concessions to any of the residents in that area in terms of providing some sort of alternative to not having any affordable housing at all. So the issue is it's just a tragedy. It's not even an issue at this point. It's just a tragedy.
Ty, can you describe what is taking place right now? Who all is at this protest?
Well, essentially, we have tried to do a multicultural, multinationality protest right here on City Hall in Alexandria. And essentially, we have brought in various Northern Virginia and national organizations, including the Urban League, the NAACP, the SEIU, the Iron Workers Union, and a host of others, in which we've just come together to speak on the various issues that are occurring in Alexandria at the expense of residents. Majority of those residents are minorities. We were coming together to shine a relatively large light on the fact that the negotiations in the city that are going on with regards to affordable housing, yes, but also towards education is just unacceptable to this community. So there's a host of nationalities, a host of people, and a host of organizations coming together to voice their concerns about the planning that Alexandria is doing currently in the city.
Ty Smith, can you talk about the role that the Pentagon plays in this development as part of the BRAC process, the Base Realignment and Closure process? Certain bases are closed, and that transfers jobs to other bases. And at Mark Center, which is alongside this West End project or West End affordable housing, thousands of units, all of a sudden that property becomes much more valuable when 6,400 defense worker jobs are transferred there. Can you talk about this process and what it has meant, although nothing is a done deal at this point, but what it seems to mean for all the folks who are living alongside it?
Well, it pretty much gives the people who are living in that community the sense that the city of Alexandria has absolutely no regard for those working class people in the city. Essentially, the BRAC building has brought in 6,400 new jobs, and the housing, ironically, that they're proposing to implement in this area is right around the same number of people that they expect to work at BRAC. And so, more or less, they don't really care about the people who are currently there, and they're essentially, once this development is complete or it's passed and what have you, the first phase starts, you essentially get 20% of the people who are currently there out in the first phase. And that 20% will increase each year up until 2015. So when 2015 comes, none of those people will be in that community simply because of this BRAC building, which is purportedly bringing in 6,400 new jobs. And they're now planning to keep those residents or those workers of the BRAC project in the city. So they want that city money to stay in the city. They want that government money to stay right here in Alexandria. And it's just a tragedy at the fact that they're not even taking a minimal consideration for the people who are currently still there.
Ty Smith, we have 30 seconds left. What do you have, a vote coming up as early as Thursday on this?
Yes, we have a planning commission vote that will be galvanizing this group who's here today to come down to City Hall again on Thursday to sit in for the planning commission hearing on this Beauregard small area plan. Well, then, whether it's approved or not, it still will go to the city council on May 12th for a final vote, and we'll be galvanizing for that event as well.
That's Ty Smith, an organizer with Tenants and Workers United, who's outside City Hall, where a May Day protest is wrapping up in Alexandria. We take a news break. When we come back, we'll be talking Walmart.